Welcome to Tube Talk, the show dedicated to helping you become a better video creator so you can get more views, subscribers, and build your audience. Brought to you by vidIQ. Download for free at vidIQ.com.
Oh, yeah! Welcome back to another episode of Tube Talk presented by vidIQ. I am your host, Viper, the man about tech, executive producer of social media here at the IQ. And this week's podcast, I'm going to take a step back. So a few weeks ago, our man Dan from the YouTube channel had a conversation with Jenny Hoyles. And if you don't know who Jenny is, she is an amazing short creator. She actually did a keynote presentation at VidSummit last year, and her short channel is over 1 million views. She gets like 10 million views on her short. So in this podcast, she's talking to Dan about her strategy, how she gets her short viewers to watch long-form content. She's talking about the different things that she does to make sure that she understands her attention and how to bring people back, and all of the goodness that you could want if you are an aspiring short creator. So let's go ahead and bring in Dan and Jenny, and let's roll to the podcast.
Well, first of all, thank you for being here. You've achieved, obviously, like tremendous success on YouTube Shorts, 10 million views on average per short. So first things first, what do you feel like your overarching strategy is and the mindset that like enables this level of consistency is?
I think the biggest overarching thing is treating YouTube like a business. So I'm just like making sure that I'm very like on top of my schedule. Like all my content is scheduled. It's all my content is on a calendar. I make sure that no matter what, there is a YouTube video posted on Saturday at 10 a.m. EST. So I think for me, it's making sure that I do quality, quantity. So I want my videos to be quality, but I also want to make sure that I'm uploading consistently. So that's why I set those schedules. So I think, I know it's a cliche, but consistency is the biggest thing. Like whatever consistency looks like for you. And for me, that's weekly because I know I can do quantity quality at weekly.
So 10 a.m. is more of like a benchmark for yourself. You don't feel like there's like a specific thing about 10 a.m. that makes it like this mind-blowing time to post a video.
Oh yeah, posting time, like it doesn't matter if a video is good, it's going to do well no matter the posting time. So I wouldn't worry about that. But I actually like setting a day and time for myself because I know if I don't put that, I will probably never upload because I'm going to be perfecting every little detail. But the truth is 20% makes 80. So I try to focus on that 20%, which is scripting and filming for me.
I love that. One of the things you mentioned recently was that as creators, we want to be in a blue ocean as opposed to like a red ocean. How do you deliberately like position yourself in a space with little competition, which is basically what the analogy is? Sorry to spoil it. Blue ocean being there's not as much competition. So how do you like identify that space? And for you, how did you identify like finance and money as that underserved niche for you?
That's a tough question. So I think when I think of blue ocean, I think of having your own unique twist. So granted, we're all going to have idols or steal like an artist, but at the end of the day, you should still have your own unique thing that makes you unique. So I think when it comes to Blue Ocean, I think it's all about thinking about what's unique to you and what's there's a saying that it's like, what are things that you're skilled at, things that you have readily available because of whatever situation, like things that put you things in your situation that help benefit you, basically, is the way I like to see a blue ocean. And for me, I was always like into entrepreneurship and business. So I knew I wanted to make videos about finance or money. And at first I was actually copying Graham Stephan, like one for one, like I kid you not, the exact same style, like the exact same, like everything, basically. I've unlisted those videos because it's very cringe. But like, like that's just like a red ocean because everyone's trying to be Graham Stephan. But then I looked at like everyone else in the money finance industry and I noticed that like there's no one doing it for kids. So I knew that there was a gap in the market essentially and I had to do it. So yeah.
Yeah. And I love what you said about like finding that thing that's unique to you. We see channels all the time that have, maybe they live on a farm and I think they take for granted like, hey, not a lot of people live on a farm and the things that you do every day, people don't do that. You know, that's kind of like a unique thing about your life. So yeah,
exactly.
It's a great way to think about it.
the reason I do a lot of saving videos, for example, is because like I just grew up in a family that like always did extreme couponing. It's so funny, but like they were all savers and do like funny things to save money. And it's like, okay, that's my content. Like no one else would probably do this, but then like that's what makes it funny and a blue ocean. So yeah, I love that.
That's so cool. Cause yeah, again, not a lot of people probably grew up in that environment and some did. So it's like relatable as well, or at least you know somebody, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So let's talk about hooks for a little bit. You've talked about how these are like the most important thing when it comes to shorts. So walk me through like the process for you for coming up with like an incredibly catchy and effective hook. What makes like a strong hook in your view?
Yeah. So there's many things that make a strong hook, but the first thing would be conciseness. So the idea needs to be simple enough. You need to make sure that your idea is simple enough to make a concise hook. Sometimes you have a good idea, but you need a lot of context to understand it. So then the hook would be complicated. And at that point, I probably just won't make the idea. Like I won't even make the video if the idea is too complicated to simplify it. So a good hook is concise, no more than 3 seconds. Secondarily, it needs to be very visually pleasing, very visually appealing. It needs to be so good that you can be watching the video on mute and still understand what the video is about. So I try to make sure that the composition's good. So what I mean by that is like everything centered in frame. There's no more than 3 things in the, I was going to say thumbnail, but it's because I do treat it like a thumbnail. So right. I try to make sure there's no more than 3 objects in the frame. And yeah, like it needs to be so good that you can use it as a thumbnail on one of your long form videos is the way I like to see it. So I think those two combined are the biggest things. But also a good hook. This is probably one of the things, like the most underrated things that no one does on hooks, but I think it's the reason why my shorts perform so well. And I think the most underrated thing in hooks is foreshadowing. So people will make great hooks and it will stop your scroll. But what if it doesn't maintain you until the rest of the video? So a good hook not only stops your scroll, but also makes sure you get to the end of the video. So by that, I mean, you should foreshadow what is to expect at the end. So some things that are very easy to apply is like, here are 3 reasons why X. So now we know the video is going to end on 3. So it doesn't need to be too complicated. Or my favorite example is I started a video by giving my grandma a $5 Christmas present and showing her reaction. So that was a cold open. So I started with the cold open of her reacting to this $5 gift. But the thing is, you don't see what the gift is until the end of the video. So I established that promise that you are going to see what the gift is at the end of the video. So I think that's another cool way of doing hooks.
Something you said about having like only 3 elements on the screen, on the frame. Videos have a lot of frames. And the next question I have is, how long does it take you on average to make one of these videos?
Oh gosh, way too much time. And probably like 20 hours. It takes about 20 hours, but now that I have a video editor who also helps like strategize, we just split the time between us.
So, because I have to imagine setting up a shot, making sure there's not more than like 3 things in the frame at any given time. That one detail out of everything you're doing, like everything must take a really long time.
Yeah. And it's ridiculous. Cause not only that, but I also, this is another tip, like just in general, do the same thing in every angle. Like it seems like useless, but you're going to thank yourself later when you have every angle to use.
That's a really good tip. I'm mentioning that just so anyone out there doesn't discount the fact that even though a video can be 34 seconds long, it doesn't matter. Like you can still spend 20 hours on it and maybe that's worth your time.
Oh, it's totally worth the time because the way I like to see it is retention is like really important on shorts. And I'm sure we'll talk about this later, but I just want to like get the point across that like with long form, at least to me, I feel like you have like every second doesn't matter as much as it does in shorts because 1 second on a short is over 1% retention. It could be 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Percent retention. But on a long form, 1 second isn't even 1% retention. So if you lose 1 second, like it's not even like percentage wise, it's not huge. But with shorts, it's like everything is so exponential. So yeah, I spent a lot of time on it.
So let's get into storytelling a little bit. You've emphasized storytelling over ideas themselves. So what storytelling frameworks and like techniques are you using? Like, how do you create an engaging narrative arc?
Yeah, so there's multiple different forms of storytelling that I like to use. And I'm going to start with the simplest, ending with the hardest retention tactic. All right. But anyway, so the simplest one that anyone can apply is but so storytelling. So it's basically, you know, creating, setting up conflict and then resolving the conflict and then setting up new conflict. So stories are interesting because of change in conflict. Storytelling is set up conflict resolution. So but so storytelling is when you, I'm trying to think of a good example, but I always use the same example, but I'll just use it anyway. So imagine a story where you say, oh, I wanted to go on a walk. So I went outside and it started raining and I didn't know what to do. So I went back home. It's like, okay, it's a story, I guess. But when you use but and so, it just sounds more entertaining. Like, oh, so I was at home, but I got bored. So I ended up going for a walk, but it started raining. So I ended up trying to figure out what to do. I was looking for an umbrella, but I couldn't find one. So I had to go back home. So it's like the story just seems so much more engaging when you use those words, especially like but. Using but a lot in the video, like it really stops. Like but is a form of re-engagement. So I probably repeat myself so many times on these shorts, but every time I say but, like it stops someone from scrolling. It's like, but what? Like, I need to see what happens. Okay. And then it's the so, and they're like, okay, I get it. Maybe I can scroll. But, and it's like, oh man, I can't scroll. So basically the whole point of the but so storytelling is like, it's one way of making a viewer not scroll. You don't want to give the viewer a reason to leave. I feel like that helps push the story along. So that's one method. And the second thing I love to do is dual narrative storytelling. So with shorts, you want to keep your videos very concise. And it's very hard to do that because you probably want to get across multiple different messages, but you only have like 60 seconds to do that. So what I do is this technique where I tell two stories at the same time. I tell one story through my voiceover or whatever I'm saying, and the second story is told in what I'm showing. So I know show don't tell is a very popular storytelling technique, but I think it's very important with shorts because I see a lot of people make shorts and they show exactly what they're saying. But when you do that, the viewer is getting no new context and you can't get as many messages across as opposed to telling two stories at the same time. So an example of me doing this is I wanted to give my grandma a $5 Valentine's gift present. But the reason why I was doing that is because, you know, it was the first year she didn't have a Valentine because my grandpa passed away. And I'm like, that's way too much context. And it's also almost like too sad. I feel like people are like, it's going to scroll if I say that. So instead, my voiceover was me talking about me making the present for her and how this is the first year she doesn't have a Valentine. I'm going to make this special. But I never said the additional context. Instead, I showed pictures of her with my grandpa to almost show to the viewer that this is the reason why I'm doing it without telling them that. So I hope that makes sense. But basically, you know, just don't, for example, I'm doing this in a new video where it's like, I'm saying like, let's see. Okay, so I'm going to find out if this is just a random example. So it's like, oh, I'm going to find out if this is worth it by doing X, Y, and Z. And instead of like just showing you doing X, Y, and Z, or like, oh, I feel like it's so complicated. I hope that example is good enough, actually. Because I feel like, do you think I explained it well?
Yeah, I do.
I hope it makes sense. Because it's like kind of complex.
Yeah.
Maybe we can keep it at the Valentine's Day example. Unless you think I should like, you know, explain it better.
No, I think we're good. I was trying to think if there's anything else I would like say to like, because I get why you're thinking yeah. It's not the best, but it is a difficult thing to explain is the problem.
Yeah, it's a difficult thing to explain.
Because okay, I would
so like
say,
for example, like okay. If you're going to a store, don't say I went to the store, then I looked for this. Instead, you would say, oh, I need to buy this because I'm going to do this while showing footage of you going to the store. Right. Basically. So it's like two contexts at the same time.
Right. Like I need this and you're already walking into Party City. I need balloons.
Exactly. Instead of saying, yeah. Oh, I'm going to Party City and buying balloons. Like we see that you're doing that. So you don't need to say it.
Well, and then what's worse is that if they're driving in the car and saying, well, I'm going to Party City. It's like, well, you could have said that at Party City now. Yeah. Cause if the video's silent and so you haven't turned on sound yet, now it just looks like you're in your car and now yeah, it's just so a person confusing. Talking in a car.
That's why your story should be so visual that the story should make sense visually. So I try to tell a visual story instead of telling a narrative story through voiceover. So it needs to be so entertaining that people can watch it on mute. And it's going to be even more entertaining when you have the voiceover.
That's a very important thing too. I've always said, like, if you can transcend language in the content you create, like, you're on another level, you know, and that's part of that. If you can watch it on mute essentially and still understand everything that's going on, you know.
Yeah, it's so hard to tell stories with no audio. That's why you gotta be very like specific with your visuals. So like just show, don't tell is basically, I think, the best storytelling technique.
Look, as YouTube creators ourselves, we've all been there. Sometimes the next video on your weekly upload schedule is right around the corner, but you have no idea what you're going to record. Well, this exact situation is why vidIQ developed Daily Ideas. It's our newest tool that can help provide you with up to 50 new video ideas every single day. Your daily ideas are generated by our AI, which analyzes your channel and the wider YouTube community to find trending topics with high view potential. With this new tool, you'll never run out of great ideas for new videos. You can try Daily Ideas for yourself today by downloading vidIQ at vidIQ.com.
So let's get into a little bit of like structure and pacing. So one thing you've mentioned is that the need to like pace things, but not like confuse viewers in the process. So what are like some of your best practices around structure and pacing?
When it comes to structure, I would try to find a repeatable format for you. So for example, for me, I have multiple buckets, which is essentially a way of saying formats or series. And then like in all those videos, I have a very similar hook that's literally the same thing. So like, for example, $1 burrito, $1 taco, $1 boba. And then right after that, I would say the why. So it would usually be something like X thinks Y is expensive. So I'm going to make it at home to save money. So basically, it's like the exact same thing, and it'd be the same formula. So when it comes to structure, I think it's all about like experimenting and testing out what's working. And once you find what works, then you're just going to be doing that thing all over again, but also try to find twists. So that's what I try to do. But as for structuring in like regular videos that there isn't formats, I think butso storytelling is the way to go. So usually the way I like to think of it is you hook quickly, foreshadow, butso storytelling, quickly wrap it up. So your hook should be like the exact same length as your ending. Your ending should not be so long. But also with structure as well, you want to make sure that it's almost a roller coaster of emotions, because there's multiple theories that back this up. So one that I want to get into is peak end theory. And it's this theory that people only remember their favorite part of a movie or whatever they're watching and the ending. So because of that, I want you guys to like just literally think about it yourself. Like think of your favorite movie and then realize that like the first thing you think of is either your favorite part or the end. Like you never think of like, oh, I remember when this boring thing happened, which makes sense, but that's like the whole point of it. So you apply this theory to any storytelling by making sure that it's a roller coaster of emotions. Because if it's like something crazy and fast followed by something crazy and fast, that crazy and fast doesn't seem as crazy and fast because you just did crazy and fast. So it needs to be also like, you know, roller coaster. So the way my favorite pacing when it comes to like structuring pacing, since it's very similar, is quick hook, medium paced middle, and probably like a peak in somewhere in the middle, like a funny joke, back to medium pacing, and then quick ending. So quick, medium, slow, quick. Quick, medium, slow, medium, quick. It's kind of complex. I mean, it's very, you do it so many times that it becomes like second nature. So the whole point of this, like basically like the overarching thing across all of this with short form pacing is do not be fast. Do not talk fast. Just talk more concise and try to get the message across in the least amount of words possible.
You kind of answer my next question. I'll throw it to you anyway in case there's anything you want to add. But it was basically like, how do you balance packing value into like every second of that short, but still allowing for the video to breathe so you're not just overwhelming people?
Yeah, it's really tough. Honestly, like at this point, it's become a feel thing. I used to like just like quick. But honestly, it becomes a feel thing at one point. So I wonder, that's a good question. I wonder how I could explain it. because it's like, it's a feel thing for sure. Okay. I think you want to be as concise as possible, but just so I can like understand. So what you're saying is like, you know, there's moments where you should be slower, and how do you identify those moments?
Yeah, basically there's like, cause it was something you mentioned. It was either an interview or on your stage presentation at VidSummit. It was about making the video still breathe. Like you kind of said it a minute ago too. It was in the same vein as like, you know, you want to be like concise, right? Like,
yeah, totally.
It's tempting to go fast and just talk fast, but that's,
yeah,
you know, it still has to breathe. A human needs to be able to sit down and like digest everything.
Yeah, so it's become very subconscious to me, but the way I like to think of it, or at least subconsciously, like, you know, it becomes a habit, is usually you'll give like that concise, quick, action-packed value and context, and then right after like giving so much context, you need to let it breathe so that they can understand the context that they just heard. Because let's just say sometimes their brain is still thinking about the previous thing. So if they're still thinking about the previous thing, you want like the breathing moment to be something that they don't necessarily need to remember, but could be like a quick laugh. Then you get back to the conciseness. And it's usually when it's like, okay, that was probably a complicated statement, or that was really important for them to know, if that makes sense. Then right after that, you would want to slow down so they could, you know, their brain isn't like going a million miles per hour.
Right. So this kind of rolls into the next topic, which would be like audience understanding. So how do you get insight into your audience's like mindset and preferences? Because you mentioned thinking from like a viewer's perspective.
Yeah, it is so tough. Like, it's so rough. So I think like when you say this, it's like, for example, just so I can understand the question. So like,
yeah.
I know, like, for example, I know my viewers are definitely like younger. So like, you know, 7 to like 14 is like the primary age. So like, it's like, how do I understand their viewing behaviors?
Basically, yeah. For us, it's like we have a lot of people who want to grow YouTube channels. And so they're the kind of person who sits down and they're struggling because they have maybe 10 views and they keep uploading and nothing's changing. And they're coming to us at a point of like frustration, you know, and that's something we keep in mind for a lot of our videos and our live streams. The demographics are different. We have younger people. We have people who have been doing this a while who are older, out of college, or, you know, maybe this is like something they're doing in retirement. So it varies wildly. But yeah, that's kind of the biggest thing we keep in mind is when they're coming to us, it's at a point where they've probably tried a lot of other things first before like, okay, I just need answers to this. Someone's got to know.
Okay. So it's like, how do I understand my avatar?
Exactly. Yeah, basically.
Okay.
That's how I interpret the question. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Because like you clearly understand your avatar well. So, okay. I get it. Well, honestly, I feel like the best way to do it is literally to send your videos to your avatar if possible. So like for me, like it's very simple to just like send it to like, you know, younger family members, or like also like my parents. So like, especially like, I feel like my mom is like my perfect avatar. It's kind of funny. Like it's, I don't know, it sounds funny, but it's like, if she doesn't laugh at something, I'm like, oh shoot. Like no one else is going to laugh at that if she didn't like that. You know what I mean? So it's like, for one, send it to people who you think is your avatar. But if you don't have that, I feel like utilizing your analytics is very important. So I'm always analyzing my analytics. So like, I try to look at the retention graph, not the percentage, because it doesn't tell you what to change by just looking at the percentage, right? You know, you look at the retention graph and you see like, oh, this joke just did not hit, or I talked way too long for that. And you just kind of have to like come up with your own assumptions and like figure that out and apply it to new videos. But it's very hard to understand your avatar. I think what makes it easier to understand your avatar is not figure out how to understand them, but think who you want to talk to first and focus on who you want to talk to rather than who you have right now. Because sometimes it might be harder to understand your avatar if you have a different avatar than you want to talk to. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Tough to do, but yes. How would you determine for any given video, like the right level of conciseness and simplicity for your audience?
Yeah. So honestly, it's all about experimentation. So I've tried experimenting like so many different types of formats, ideas, videos, pacing, structures. And I'm still experimenting because I still don't know. Like, you know, I'm still always trying to learn because, yes, I average 10 million views. But then I'm like, yeah, but you can average 100 million views. So, you know, I'm still experimenting. But I think the key thing is to, like, experiment a bunch of different things until you find what's working for you. And then that's probably what's going to work. And just, like, double down, triple down. Actually, just 100x down, whatever the saying is, to that structure.
Awesome. So we've talked a little bit about metrics for analyzing content and success. What would you say are the specific ones you look at to analyze and then optimize your short strategy? Which are, like, the most important data points?
Oh my gosh, there's so many. For one...
That's true.
Yeah. For one is retention graph. You know, I got to learn from my mistakes. I need to see where people dropped off. Of course, that's how I make better content. But as for what content to make and content strategy, I'm looking at my real-time 48 hours or my top performers in the last 90 days. So I'm going to get into, like, a little bit of detail on that. So as for real-time in the last 48 hours, what I'm looking for is videos that are a bit old, but performing in the last 48 hours. Because, like, for example, right now, my last 48 hours is one video from a year ago, and then a bunch of them are videos from, like, last month. But then what's interesting is, like, why is my number one performer a video from last year? And so it's like you're seeing the real-time data, what's going on right now. And that's how you understand, like, what videos are actually the ones you need to recreate and what is actually resonating with your audience. So because I saw that video from a year ago was performing number one in the last 48 hours, I actually recreated that video and made it better by looking at the retention graph. So similar to that, I look at the advanced mode top performers in the last 90 days just to get an idea of, like, you know, what's going on. And then I'll click the plus and toggle on, like, a bunch of different things and try and figure out patterns, because that's how, like, I, like, know all this just by, like, looking at my analytics. So, like, for example, I'll look at, oh, what's my average duration of videos that are my top performers? That's how I know my best videos are 34 seconds. So I'll usually just, like, toggle as many analytics as possible and see if there's any patterns there.
One of the things you said is retention itself, though, isn't everything. So what other data gives you insight into, like, a short's viral potential and, like, overall success?
Yeah, it's very hard because it's very difficult to gauge whether something is going to go viral just from analytics, because I feel like it's so much more complex than, like, what's in the surface. It's like, you know, that iceberg picture where it's like, it just, like, the ocean just gets deeper. Like, that's what it feels like. So honestly, I think number one thing I do look at is retention, but like I said, it's not everything. So the second thing I'll look at is engagement metrics. So likes, shares, comments, but more specifically shares. So retention is number one and shares is number two to me. And the reason being is because unlike other platforms like Instagram or TikTok, YouTube is not a platform where people usually share, like, even within app. So, you know, like on TikTok, you can send it to your friends in the app. But YouTube, it's like kind of a hassle to share a video. So, like, if someone's sharing a video, like, they really, like, enjoyed the video. They really liked it. So I think that's a really important metric. Oh, and also for shorts, I don't know why I missed my... went over my head, but the view versus swiped away metric is absolutely huge.
Okay. That one's a little bit newer. It's one that we've kind of, like, looked at, but we just don't, it's hard to know what it means. Like, maybe there's some insight here. So I'm just going to ask you for selfishly, I have a question about this. Do you know how long someone has to watch a video before it's considered swiped away or viewed? And I know it's going to be based on percentage because videos can be like 3 seconds long. But I'm just curious if you have, like, if you've looked into anything, because obviously YouTube's never going to, like, just be upfront and tell us.
Yeah, so I actually spoke to a YouTube employee and they literally told me how it works.
Oh, okay, great.
But it's exactly what you just said. So when it comes to view versus swiped away, that's view versus swipe away is gauging how good your hook is. But then it's like, how many seconds is a hook is what you're saying. So right. Like you said, there can be a 3 second video and it's like, is the hook 3 seconds? Is the hook the whole video? Or on the other hand, there can be a 60-second video and you're like, 3 seconds is kind of a lot of time for a hook. So for that reason, they use a percentage. I'm not sure the exact percentage, but basically, yeah, it's somewhere between 1 to 3 seconds, depending on the length of the video. So for that reason, like I said, a lot of things with content creation is feel. So there's a lot of strategies, but I think you got to be story first, strategy second. So figure out how to make a good, entertaining piece of content that's just like good pacing, and then you optimize on top of that.
Okay, well, thank you for that, because yeah, I've always been very suspicious. I'm glad you glad you've asked about that. I want to circle back to buckets just real quick. So outside of like buckets themselves, like what else do you intentionally do to build loyalty and get viewers like coming back habitually?
Yeah, so like buckets is probably like 90% of like creating returning viewers. But another thing I do as well is keeping my titles very similar. So if you look at, like, if you look at my videos, I try to have some sort of thing about money in the title. So whether that's a dollar sign, free, saving, or saving money, or couponing, like something along the lines, or like a side hustle. So it needs to be along that, the lines of like one overarching theme. So it's very similar to a bucket, to be honest. So I try to just keep the content consistent and the structure and format consistent, because people at this point know, like, they know my branding, they know like the structure. And I think that that helps with creating that returning viewers.
How many buckets would you say like right now that you have on your channel?
Honestly, two. So I have the $1 food items and $5 presents. Oh, whoops. But anyway, one thing I also want to touch up, because I just realized on creating returning viewers, this is a huge analytic that you can check. I talked to so many creators, and this is like the best like thing on analytics that no one looks at. So I'm just going to expose it. Everyone got to check it on their analytics like literally right now. But basically, there's an analytic where you can see what you can see what videos are turning new viewers into returning viewers. So I look at that metric, because it's huge. Not only like, you know, keeping returning viewers, but it's like what content is turning those new viewers into returning viewers is what's absolutely huge. So you want to look at that and then identify patterns or even recreate that video. So yeah.
Great call out on that one. That's, I think, a very underrated metric, and one that I would urge any viewers of this channel to focus on, because we're constantly telling people and trying to correct course. So many people want to make videos about whatever, like, well, you should really try and like find like some kind of through line, what connects all your content together. And
yes,
if you can do that, suddenly that metric becomes really, really powerful, because otherwise it's just like this chaotic mishmash of videos. Like, I did a vlog one day, and you know, the other day I was playing a game, so I recorded that, and you know,
yeah, exactly.
One type of person going back.
Yeah, you need some sort of glue. Similar to that, you can look at your new viewers and returning viewers. It's like a purple and a blue line. So what you want to see is, it's very hard to do, I'm not gonna lie. It's easier said than done, but you want to look at your returning viewers and your new viewers graph, and you want to see returning viewers go up while new viewers go down, because what that shows is those new viewers are turning into returning viewers. So under that like date, or whenever that happened, you want to see what were those most popular videos that were causing that as well. So I think that's huge as well.
Nice. So getting into future plans for you. So as you venture into like long form videos, how are you applying these strategies from shorts? And then what changes are you making to kind of adapt?
Yeah, so I think I have like probably one of the best strategies that I haven't seen anyone do. I'm going to try it out. We'll see if it works. But my strategy to convert from shorts to long form is to literally make very similar feeling content. Not necessarily the same exact content, because that content, if it could just be done in a short, just do it in a short. But what I mean by that is bit-based videos. So I think doing bit-based videos is like absolutely huge. So bits would be like things that Eric does, David Dobrik, Mr. Beast. So essentially creating 30-second shorts until it adds up to an 8-minute video is my strategy. But at the end of the day, like at the end of the video, it's going to be one overarching goal. So I think like that's the biggest strategy. So like, for example, I do a lot of fast food videos. Like I easily have like 20 video. I easily have like 20 shorts where I recreated fast food items. So imagine a long form where I did like, I recreated 100 fast food items, and it's basically the same thing, because I know my shorts viewers watch that, and it's like, it's gonna be the same thing. It's a bunch of bits, so 30 to 60 second segments all the way until we do 100, essentially, is like my strategy.
So and that sounds like a fantastic way to keep like a shorts viewer like potentially hooked on a long form video. But as I'm sure you're well aware of, a lot of people struggle with this. Getting people to watch your long form videos who watch your shorts is almost impossible. It's not very reliable at all. How are you handling that challenge? And what are you seeing in your data?
Yeah, it's very rough. But what I will say is what I'm seeing is, so for context, my shorts average 10 million views per video, but my long forms range between 50 to 500K. It's a very wide range. But like my top performing videos on long form are like literally almost all returning viewers. So what I am identifying is, yes, people are converting from shorts to long form, and the retention is actually great. In fact, even when I link a long form from my short, like with the new related feature, like my retention is like crazy high on my long forms, even though they're coming from shorts. And I think the reason is because the feel is just like very similar. So like one of my long forms, for example, is like almost completely voiceover and like with a little bit of like IRL segments, because that's exactly what my shorts are. It's just a bunch of voiceovers with like clips. I literally treated it as if I was making a short, but I just made it longer. And it just had that similar feel. And it seemed to have done well. It's almost at 1 million views. So I mean, maybe it's working. I guess it's a very hard thing, but like just figure out what's unique to you and your feel and of style, I guess, that would keep people engaged.
Just for some encouragement, what would you tell someone who's enjoying a lot of success on their shorts, but they're struggling with long form? When I say that, I think of you as somebody who can get 10 million views in a short in your sleep. And then, you know, you post a long form and you're not enjoying that same amount of views, just in, you know, on average. Like, what would you say to someone who's kind of feeling the same way?
Yeah, it really sucks. Like, for someone, it just sucks. But I think you have to see it as like two different games. Like, they're two completely different challenges to me because they're two different formats. So I wouldn't beat yourself up for it. But like, to me, the way I see it is like almost as if it's two different channels. Like, I kid you not, I know it's under one channel, but I see it as two. Well, you want to make the same content. Don't actually see it as two different channels. But what I mean by that is like, I don't see myself as I have 1.6 million subscribers. I see myself as I have 1.590 million subscribers, because I know that you can check in your analytics. I only have 10, like, actually, I don't know exactly, but it's like, I think in the last 90 days, I know exactly. Like in the last 90 days, I only have 10,000 long form subscribers. So I'm very aware that I know that it's two different audiences and it's two different games. So on the flip side, in the last 90 days, I have 10,000 subscribers, but I'm getting pretty good views on long form. So actually it seems pretty good to me, because it's like, if I didn't do shorts, I would just be like probably a 25K subscriber channel getting 100,000 plus views on long forms, which is amazing. So I think you just have to see it as two different games, not beat yourself up for it. And it's two different things, I think. But you'll figure it out. Literally, like what I'm doing is exactly what I did to master shorts is exactly the time and effort I'm going to put to master long form, because it's two different games.
Love it.
It's like chess and checkers. They're not related at all, but people think that it's the exact same thing because the board is exactly the same, but it's completely different. And I would know, I used to play professionally.
that's a totally different interview.
Yeah.
unless you have a chess channel with like 10 million views a short or something.
Oh my gosh. Imagine.
So long-term goals on YouTube, what does like the future look like for you, and what does success look like in that future?
Yeah, honestly, success is just happiness and freedom. Like, I know it's such a like basic answer, but yeah, like basically my long-term goals for YouTube is to literally have fun. Cause I started the channel at the beginning of the day, I literally started this to have fun. Like, I didn't actually think it was going to be a full-time job. Like, I swear, I never imagined that I was going to be where I am today, because I was just doing it out of passion. So the long-term goal is to continue doing it out of passion. And genuinely, my passion is like figuring out like the algorithm and these puzzles and figuring out like how to get like all these views. So for that reason, like long-term, I want to figure out long form, because that's the fun part. I feel like once you made it, like the destination is not all that. It's about the journey. So like that, I feel like that's what I see for myself. Just like, you know, just upping that milestone. And but like, I don't want it to seem like it's like a Harman. No, sorry. What was I going to say? I was about to say Harman cycle. My bad. What's it called? I don't want to say it's like the. It's not healthy, to like always like be like, oh, I'm gonna be happy when I get this, and then you get that, and you're like, oh, I'm gonna be happy when I get that. Instead, like, always be happy and just like always strive for more. Always be grateful, but strive for more. That's my goal. So literally, 10 million subscribers. Put simply, 10 million subscribers, average 10 million views per long form.
Solid goals. Just on the subject of like making money with shorts, because I'm sure you've seen like the AdSense on shorts for most creators is very small. But you yourself are someone who's admitted to everybody, I love money. How can somebody who's like getting into shorts and seeing a bit of success, like leverage them to make money? Like, and I guess I should ask first, is shorts a viable way to make money, or did it only start for you after you start making long form?
Shorts is totally a viable way to make money. I don't know who like thought that it's not, but it totally is. Like, okay, so oh, like there's so many ways. So I feel like, but it might just be like the entrepreneur in me. You can make money anywhere. You know, like it doesn't matter. I think that a shorts creator could make just as much money as a long form creator. Maybe not as much ad revenue, but you can make the same money. For example, like I'll just be like let me I wonder what the numbers would look like. Okay, so for example, I average like 50 to 100 million views per month on shorts. So because of that, it ranges between 5 to 10k per month in ad revenue, right? Versus like if I was doing long form and I was getting those views, what the heck? I'd be like at what, like 100k a month? Like, so theoretically, ad revenue wise, it's much worse. But if you have products, courses, sponsorships, that's where the money is to be made. So I actually have, I can't say who it is, okay. But I know a couple of people, let's just say, I know a couple of creators who literally make $1 million per sponsored short. And that, wow. I'm just saying, so, and they get less views than me, or probably about the same. So that's, I'm not in that boat.
Encouraging.
I'm not that's... in that boat, but...
I was gonna say, because I think you've done some sponsored shorts, if I'm not mistaken. So
yeah,
but it's so, not you.
Yeah, it's totally viable. I think yeah. You just got to be a good businessman, good businesswoman, good business person.
Yeah, I love that. And so, from what you're seeing, there are people out there who are willing to companies, I should say, who are willing to sponsor a creator who is primarily a shorts creator.
Yeah, totally. If they have like a good dedicated audience, I think so.
Is there like an average you know view count? Yeah. Is there like an average view count you would say a shorts creator needs to be achieving in order to attract a sponsor?
No. Oh, wow. Of course not, because it depends on the niche. So like if you do like, I don't know, like knitting and you get like 100k views per video, like it's so viable. You would like 100% right. get a sponsorship. But like if you're getting like, you know, 100k on probably like Minecraft. I don't know, because there's so many people in Minecraft. There's so many big creators. So it definitely depends on the niche, I think.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Tube Talk, brought to you by VidIQ. Head over to vidIQ.com/tubetalk for today's show notes and previous episodes. Enjoy the rest of your video making day.